Zone3 Podcast, I am Robert.
Yes, and I am Reggie.
And today we are joined by Kelly Mantooth. Is that how you pronounce it?
That is how you pronounce it.
Hi, Kelly, you are at MRSC. I'm seeing you online all the time. You've got quite the presence.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, so this is your first time in Arizona.
It is.
What do you think so far?
It's beautiful. I'm from Tennessee, from Knoxville to be specific, and it's kind of known to be really humid. So it gets this warm, but it's like sticky. If that makes sense, you go outside and you're like, oh, why am I so clammy? But here it's dry, and so it's nice. It doesn't feel like it's as warm as it does back home.
They say it's a dry heat, so it's not miserable, but just wait until August.
You'll have to have me back in August then so that I know what that's like.
You're willing. You'll be surprised. 115.
Oh, yeah.
Dry or wet is still miserable. But all right. Well, so you're from Tennessee. You're an MRSC. I see you online. You just did a seminar with Toby.
Yeah.
So you're making big moves right now.
Thank you.
Tell us about yourself.
So I have been an MR tech for almost 13 years. It's creeping up on me. I got my MRSO in 2019 and then my MRSE in 2022. Shortly after getting my MRSE, I got invited to sit on the board of the ABMRS. So I'm a board member for the ABMRS. I'm also a member of the ISMRT MR Safety Committee. Oh, and I'm not trying to flex, but I left off one really important part. I'm the National MR Safety Trainer for MetroSense right now.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So tell me, what's as far as roles go, and what's the difference between an MRSE and an MRSO?
So an MRSO, at least from my experience, has been daily implementation, oversight, making sure the policies and procedures are followed. MRSE is more advisory. It's about the physics of the scanner. How does that play into this? So my role when I was clinical was more MRSO. Now I did have my MRSE. And so some of that helped me with that role. But if you separate the two, an MRSE is typically a physicist and not a technologist. So maybe I'm just crazy and was like, let's do it all.
You're a go-getter. That's awesome.
She likes challenges.
Yeah. We're going to have a push-up challenge later that no one knows.
I'm going to do it right now. I swear to God, I will.
I'm out.
Yeah, I might look like I'm in great shape. I mean, right?
Yeah.
But I...
Yeah.
I don't want to put words in your mouth. All right, well, today we're talking about RF burn.
Yeah.
I guess it's the number one adverse event.
Well,
so it's something that we haven't really talked about in detail.
Mm-hmm.
And so thank you for joining us on this topic.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about it.
First, let's define what an RF burn is.
Okay, that's a good place to start. So I think a lot of people get confused when we talk about burns. And I think that they think SAR equals burns. And that's not true. So SAR and RF burns are unrelated. So SAR is going to be overall or diffuse heating, and RF burns are going to be local or focal heating. And so you can have high SAR and not have a burn, right? So we can put you on a 1.5 or a 3T. 3T, you're going to get more RF energy deposition, but you're not. That doesn't necessarily mean how you're going to get a burn if we put you on a 3T, right?
Experience the pinnacle of MRI safety with our encompassing solutions. By combining the strengths of MetroSense Ultra and FaroGuard Assure, we offer a solution that truly clears the way. This ensures you not only meet but effortlessly exceed all MRI safety standards. MRI room incidents are on the rise, but with our combined solutions, MetroSense clears the way, ensuring the safety of patients, staff, and equipment. Our expert team is always ready to assist, ensuring you have the most comprehensive MRI safety solution available.
Okay, and when it comes to the burns themselves, like, are we able to, Katie, can you find some photos of, like, what an RF burn looks like? Like, does it have to have certain characteristics for it to be defined as an RF burn? Like, how do they identify it?
I that's a good question. I don't think that there's any, like, I don't think that there's another kind of burn that you can get an MR, right? So the RF field is going to be responsible for all heating. So you can't, like, if you go in and you just lay in the magnet and we never run a pulse sequence on you,
right,
you're not going to get a burn. So the static field's not going to cause a burn. The gradient field's not going to cause a burn. So if you come out of a magnet and you've got a burn, it was induced by the RF field. So I don't know. I think the way that they determine is going to be dependent on the type of burn that it is, but I don't think that they have different does that make sense? Like, it'll show up the same, but it'll be like, oh, you got this burn from this or this burn from this, and we'll talk about the four types of burns. But if you get a burn in an MRI, it's from the RF field.
Okay. And so as far as like the pathophysiology of that, like how does it come to be? Like what, like the tissue cells, like the cutaneous or the subcutaneous, like where does it start? Where's the origin?
That's another good question. So think of this, think of when you get an MR, think about it like a microwave. We're going to heat you from the inside out, essentially. It's a dipole-dipole interaction. So some people can come out of an exam and maybe they've got skin reddening, but then that burn doesn't manifest for 24 hours. And then it can worsen because we burn you from the inside out.
Oof. I like how you brought up the microwave, right?
Yeah.
Because I can think of like hot dogs, right?
Yeah.
When you chop up hot dogs and the tip of them kind of touch.
Yeah.
In the microwave, they get that burnt right where they touch at. So that makes sense. That's a great analogy.
Yeah, it's just like a hot dog.
You know?
Well, speaking of like microwaves, and I've asked several people about this only because I had a personal experience one time with a patient. I was working at a hospital and it was an inpatient. I declined to send for the patient because they had a severe fever.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Like 103 or something.
Yeah.
Something.
Yeah.
And I say, no, we can't do this. The patient has a severe fever. We had a 3T and a 1.5.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was like, show me the literature that says we can't do this. Why can't we? And I said, well, think about it. We're literally putting them in a microwave at 103 degree temperature. Mm-hmm. So long story short, it got done when I wasn't there. And actually, when I came back the next day, I was actually walking in as they were just finishing up the exam. And I said, oh, did his fever come down? They go, no. I'm like, really? I looked into the room. They decided to scan this person on the 3T instead of the 1.5. And even worse, they gave the man a warm blanket.
Did they scan him in first level controlled as well?
Well, and that's funny because I was just looking on your Instagram. I noticed that you said that there's three different modes. And I've always really just considered two. But so obviously standard, which is
normal operating mode. Yeah.
And then there's first level.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes up as an option to select. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a SAR warning or some sort. But then what about like second level?
So typically second level controlled is a reserve for research. And there's actually a key that you have to go into the magnet to turn it into second level controlled. The biggest difference between the three, at least from like a SAR or a heating standpoint, is going to be the amount of heat that their internal core temperature can reach. So with first level controlled, it's, I think, up to 1 degree Celsius increase. And did I say first level? Normal mode, up to 1 degree Celsius increase. First level is 1 degree Celsius. And then second level is greater than 1 degree Celsius.
That's awesome. Like I said, I've never really heard of that. And you've never seen it in clinical use. It's all research. Have you ever seen it in research?
No, I haven't.
Because in research mode, literally, it will not like stop the scan. It won't do anything. It just goes.
It
must run, right?
Wow.
So walk me through the steps that you take when you do have a patient with a burn. Like, do you, because I see them draw a marker around.
Mm-hmm.
Me,
mm-hmm.
And then you just kind of monitor them for an X amount of time. Like, what is usually that period of time?
Yeah, you're asking really good questions today. So I have never actually witnessed a burn. I know I feel like I need to like knock on it,
right?
Or something.
We got plenty of
because it's the most common, right?
It's a compliment to you. You're using those pads.
Or I've just been really lucky, right? And I think we can talk about that too. And I want to go back to your question. But one of the things that I feel like is not talked about frequently enough, and I think Toby Gilk talks about this a lot too, is we don't discuss when we have adverse events, we don't talk about it where it's like, oh, let's sweep that under the rug and pretend like that didn't happen. And so then nobody learns from that, right?
Right.
So one of the things that I do want to make sure that we touch on today, I've had a couple of incidents that come to mind for me, at least that stand out, that I want to make sure maybe not RF related or burn related, but that we discussed just to say, hey, these things happen and it changed the course of at least one of them, changed the course of my career. And then the second one is just, oh my God, how did that happen to me? So, but we don't have to talk about it now. But eventually I do want to talk about it. If you want to talk about it now, we can.
It's a cliffhanger. I like it.
Yeah?
No, let's talk about like...
This is where the commercial break comes in.
If you want to, go ahead.
Okay. So 13 years ago, little baby tech Kelly, not even registered yet. I was still in school and they were like, let's bring her on as a student tech, which I don't know. Do they even do that now still? Do they still do student techs? Okay. So in Tennessee, I think it takes a little while longer for things to get to the East Coast. We'll just start there. We'll say that. Okay. So when I was working, we had four magnets. And if you can imagine walking in a room, there were three magnets here and you go all the way down this long hallway and there was our last magnet. And for some reason, they were like, let's put the new girl who doesn't have any experience down here on this magnet by herself. and to set the stage for you all, this was in a time where pacemakers weren't being scanned, stimulators weren't being scanned. When I first started heart stents, it was like, we got to have 6 weeks, right? And then they were like, okay, well, you can do it immediately after implantation, but only on a 1.5, right? So I'm just setting the stage for you guys. We didn't change patients' clothes. It was just like, come one, come all, everybody gets an MRI, they're safe, right? So I had this patient that was having a brain scan done. I walk him all the way down, like 2 miles down to this other magnet where I'm completely by myself. And I put him on the table head first. I raise the table up. And I turn around and get a cushion to put it under his legs. And I'm giving him like my spiel, like this is how long it's going to take. And this is what you can expect. And he says, hey, this feels funny. And I haven't turned back around. I'm still like grabbing my stuff. And I'm like, yeah, that's normal. And he's like, no, when I take my hand like this, it feels funny. And so I turned around and I looked at him. I was like, can I look at your hand? And he shows me his hand and there's something in his hand that is moving. And I was like, hey, have you ever had an injury? And he was like, oh, my God, I forgot about this. He was like a mechanic, and he still had his outfit on. And he said, I had a piece of a carburetor or something break off in my hand. And he said, and it must still be in there. And so then he proceeds to like, and I'm like, hey, well, let's stop doing that. let's not do that anymore. Let's put your hand down. I'm going to get you out of the room, okay?
Right.
It's important that I tell you that he was a mechanic because when he walked in, he had boots on and he took his boots off and he sat him down at like the bottom of the base of the magnet near the bore. So we get up and he's sitting on the side of the table and he's still taking his hand. I'm like, okay, we're coming out of the room. And I'm like, you've scared me enough. I'm already green. I don't know fully what I'm doing. I'm down here by myself. We used to call it like East Knoxville. Like it was that far away. East and West Knoxville, if you know anything about Knoxville, are pretty far away.
Yeah.
So I get him up and I'm like, you know, grab your shoes. And he bends down and he grabs his shoes and they're still toed boots. And he gets up and he goes to walk and he swings his arm back and those boots go and they stick to the magnet. And he's like, my boots. I'm like, just get out of the room.
Yeah.
just get out of the room. So I get his boots and we leave. But for me, that was a turning point in my career. I mean, very, very new to my career. But that was like, if I ever get the opportunity to understand everything that I can about MR safety and then give that back to everybody else so that no one else ever has to feel the way that I feel in this moment, I'm going to do that. And at the time, I didn't know Manny Canal. I didn't know Toby Gilk. I didn't know anything. I mean, I was just so green that it was like, what just happened? Could I have hurt this person worse than I did? So for me, that was like the start of, how do we know more about this and how do we prevent this moving forward? Right?
Right.
It lit a fire in you.
It lit a fire. Yeah. Oh, it scared me.
So I had potential for harm was definitely there, yeah. But you caught it.
Yeah. Yeah. And just so everyone at home knows, he's okay.
But is he though? Is he?
And his boots are okay.
So you pulled the boots off yourself?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice. Maybe I don't want arm.
Or push-up contest. I can't.
All right. Well, back to, I think, like the assessment standards, we talked about like drawing a circle around it. There's a period of time in which they can, maybe you can chime in, Katie, because you have seen a burn. And
yes, I've seen multiple burns.
Yeah. And so when this happens, what are usually the things that happen after?
So the process that I follow in my practice is we'll take a photo of the burn. The facility that I work at gives us an iPad and it'll upload directly to the patient chart.
Yeah.
So that's usually the first step is taking a picture. When we take the picture, we'll draw with a Sharpie around the outside border of the burn and then grab a piece of like measuring tape. It's like a piece of paper measuring tape. Measure it, take the photo with the tape measure. That way you know what the size is. And when the patient follows up, we can see if it's changed.
So when there are burns, like statistically, it's usually in the shoulder, like peripheral spots, like the shoulders, the elbows, that's where you've seen them mostly, right?
I would say mostly, yeah.
Yeah. I had one coworker, I swear I helped him. He did everything right. Padding. I think he was doing a shoulder. It was anesthesia on a 3T and moved the patient over to ISO center and the person got a pretty good sized burn right on their elbow. I mean, it was probably the size, not quite as big as a ping pong ball, but it was almost.
And that was immediately when they took him out of the scanner?
See, so I never heard of, I mean, I just kind of helped position the paste. Mm-hmm. And then the next day, like, oh, like I got a burn. And then I saw a picture. I'm like, holy crap. So I don't know
what it manifested to in the end.
Yeah. When it revealed itself. But yeah.
And you said he was sedated, right?
Yeah. So I was going to cover that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe now's a good time because since then, the policy has been implemented that we are not to do any, at least MSK study mm-hmm. on a 3T.
With sedation or anesthesia?
I think it's mostly shoulders. Anything you're going to move into ISO center.
Yeah. So I know that anesthesia and sedation can alter the like your thermoregulatory response. So it might, I mean, a burn wouldn't, it's different, right? But we're talking about diffuse or overall heating compared to like local or focal heating. But I do know that if they're sedated or anesthetized, well, one, they can't tell you if they feel anything, but two, it also alters your thermoregulatory response. But there are four different kinds of burns, and what you're describing is a proximity burn. So that's being close to that inherent coil, that RF transmitter inside the magnet. But you said that he padded the patient. Did he check the integrity of the padding?
Well, we work at a place that always has the latest and greatest. So this wasn't like one of those old pads.
Yeah.
Where it should have been replaced years ago. And the new pad, it was a recommended thickness.
Yeah.
Where was the burn?
It was on his elbow.
On the opposite side that we were steering?
I don't remember that part.
Mm-hmm.
You'd think that it would have to be, right?
Right.
Because if I'm scanning this shoulder, we're going to push you over a little further this way to get that closer to ISO center.
My memory is it was opposite, but I can't say with certainty, but I think it was.
Well, but I guess it brings up a good point. So how do you identify these high-risk patients, right?
Yeah. I think that would start with like a set, you know, especially in this scenario, if your body habit is going to touch, then there is a concern for a proximity burn, right? But I think when we talk about the burns, there's proximity burns, there's a looping burn, a resonant burn, and a reflective burn. And so you have to just go through each one of those assessments separately and say, okay, am I doing everything that I can to prevent all four of these burns? I don't know what else could have been done if they padded that patient appropriately. Unless maybe the padding like shifted.
Right. Maybe here.
Looping burn, I want to write this down.
Mm-hmm. Proximity. A looping burn. And the looping burn can also be known as like an induced current loop burn.
That's our hot dog burn.
a resonant burn.
So the one I've never heard of before is a
reflective. Yeah. And so some people can argue that that's also a resonant burn, but reflective burns are going to be, think about if you put like a space blanket in a magnet, or people that wear their Lululemon leggings in there that okay. The clothing has the antimicrobial or sweat wicking, the metallic fibers in there. That's how you'll get those. That's what the reflective burns are.
So for that reason, you would highly recommend that any facility, outpatient or in hospital, that they do, they change the patient completely.
I would. And the main reason why is because even if you think that it's, maybe the tag says it's 100% cotton, it doesn't always have to disclose. It can have up to like a 5% impurity, and the tag won't say that. So there could be some sweat wicking or antimicrobial fibers in there, some of those metallic fibers, and the tag doesn't have to disclose that.
So I'm one of those annoying patients.
Okay.
Why do I have to change? You're just looking at my foot.
Okay. So ideally, you want to change anything that's going to be in the transmit field, but sometimes it's easier to just say, we're going to change everybody. And then that way you don't have to deal with this, right? Well, last time I was here, I didn't have to change clothes, because it's hard to explain to a patient, well, last time we scanned your foot and this time we're scanning your abdomen and you've got Lululemon leggings on. Just don't always understand that.
Right. And to give you, I'll give you an example. Just yesterday I had a patient, first patient of the day, I was walking her back from the front lobby and she goes, why am I filling out this stupid screening form? It seems so silly. I said, well, you think it's silly. We think it's important.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, I didn't have to do all this 30 years ago. I'm like, well, 30 years ago, we weren't as educated and we didn't have 3Ts back then either.
Mm-hmm. A lot has changed.
Yeah. So. You know, I'm glad you brought that up, because I liken what we do to what a pilot does, right? I mean, think about a pilot. Think about how many checklists they have to fill out. Imagine getting on a plane and somebody be like, come on, man, can you hurry up? Do we really have to go through this checklist? We're ready to go. Let's get this plane in the air. I am one of those people that would be like, you take your time, take as much time as you need, make sure everything's working like it should, you know? And think about these patients too. When they get it, like, they don't know how to mitigate the risk. It's not their wheelhouse. That's our job. So it is frustrating that patients are comparing this to something that I did 30 years ago. I don't know of anything.
Well, then I always say it was more than 30 years
ago. Yeah.
But I would say more like, you know, back in the day, we used to smoke on airplanes. Does that mean we should still smoke on airplanes?
And in restaurants and in our houses. Yeah, yeah.
Well, 30 years ago, we probably did smoke in restaurants.
Yeah.
There were smoking sections. But all right, so we covered reflective burn. You said that's somewhat similar to resonant burn, but we know what proximity burn is. But what's I know what a looping burn is as well, but give me an example, a couple.
Looping burns. Think about if your calves barely touch. Anything that's like a small amount of skin-to-skin contact. I've seen patients lay with their like thumb on their ear, small amounts of skin-to-skin contact. If they lay with their thumbs touching their sides. Some facilities don't give paper pants, they'll give shorts. So if your thumb barely touches your thigh, that can cause a burn. Anything that is a small contact of skin-to-skin.
And a pad has to be a certain thickness. What is it?
Yeah, it's 0.5 centimeters to 1 centimeter.
Okay, and then so does like, but like your thighs touching, just the thinness of your scrub pants, would that? So
I guess it depends on how much of your thighs touch. My whole thighs touch, so I don't have a thigh gap, but if there is a very small, then I would put a pad there. I would definitely put, and we should also talk about what kind of pad you should use, like towels, sheets, yeah. Those are not sufficient. And the reason why they're not sufficient is because if your patient sweats in there, then it's gonna saturate the towel or the sheet, and then that you're just closing the loop now, and you've just created this superconducting highway for all those e-fields to go to and pile up and say, let's cause a burn here.
Right, that's a good point.
Well, and speaking of things conducting, like earrings.
Yeah.
It's not ferrous, it's real gold. Yeah. My husband bought it for me 2 years ago. I'm telling you, it's real gold. Why do I need to take it off? They didn't make me take it off last time.
So I would say a lot of this is going to depend on, again, is it in the transmit field? Is it conductive? And then just have a policy at your site for what you're willing to accept and what you're willing or what you're not willing to accept. I, off the top of my head, and this could just be the extent of my knowledge, don't know of anyone who's ever been burned from like a pure gold ring or a pure gold hoop earring.
But isn't gold even more conductive?
I think it's less.
Really?
Yeah, I think rare earth metals are not super conductive. Could be wrong. I'm open to being wrong there. Do you know, Katie? I don't know for
sure. Jamie, can you check that? Joe Rogan. Will you look that up? Because I'm curious. I don't want to misinform people, but
I don't either.
Because like I said, I get that a lot. And so the same thing with like changing clothes, like just have a blanket policy.
I found that works best, but that's just to eliminate confusion. You know, you have patients show up and they're like, well, like we said earlier, well, I didn't have to change for this last time. Why am I having to change now? So it's just like, if you set that expectation at the beginning of you're going to change down to skin because we don't know what's in your clothes.
Right.
Sometimes that makes it easier, especially if you have these patients sitting in the same dressing room together and like, why do you get to keep your pants on, but I have to wear these paper pants?
Exactly. Yep. We have that issue because CT shares the same change room with us, so they always question it everything.
And then you get in there and they're mad before they even start their exam.
Right.
Well, and then only because you said I've never heard of an example. So, you know, you talked about earlier how like stents, we've like asked 6 weeks, how many stents are there overlapping? Now we don't care about stents at all. Just scan the patient. For the most, our cardiac stent.
Coronary stents.
I was just telling Reggie this a couple weeks ago. I predict that 2, 3, maybe 5, I don't know, years from now, sometime in the near future, we are not going to care about glucose monitors anymore. I have never heard of anybody who's ever had an adverse reaction to a glucose monitor. Have you ever heard of any events?
Are you talking about like a Dexcom?
Yep.
No, I haven't.
And every single patient complains about taking it off. They complain about the cost of it. I just put things cost. And I'm sorry.
Don't they have ferrous components in them though?
Well, they do. They do. There's there is. Yep.
But there's got to be something else that's not, because don't people read? Don't they use their phone to like read those? Oh, yeah. So there has to be something else, something electronic or something in it. Right?
Right.
So I guess my concern then wouldn't necessarily be, you know, like with an insulin pump, we worry about, is it going to deplete all of that insulin into you? So my concern then wouldn't be from that. It would be, is this going to alter the function of the glucose monitor?
Right. So we can approach it like we would a loop recorder then.
Yeah.
So yes, we can still scan you with this on, but just know that you're...
It might erase everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see in 2 to 5 years.
And if it's ferrous, are you putting it into the RF?
That's what I'm saying. If we're scanning the foot, maybe we should think about it with more critical thinking skills. We're scanning a foot, it's on their upper arm.
Yeah, then what spatial gradient is it going to be exposed to? Has it even been, have those been tested? Do they just say unsafe?
There's a lot of go. Oh. I pretend like I do.
Yeah. Right?
Somebody that was on that MRI safety group on Facebook that presented that same question.
Yeah.
Has anybody on here, of a group of what, 28,000? I look right now. How many MR techs are on the safety group?
I don't know.
And not one person had ever personally had an experience or mm-hmm. knew somebody who personally had an experience.
But they have scans.
And everybody knows 20 techs. So
yeah.
It's, you know.
Yeah. That's a good. You'll have to let me know if you find anything out of
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
I would be concerned with a burn with that if it's in the transmit field, right? Because it's not plastic, so it could be conductive, so it could heat up and burn. But then I think my next concern would be, is it ferrous? Would it pull? And then my next concern would be, will we alter the function of this?
Right.
Well, and so you advise patients on safety when it comes to implants and stuff like that. And I know that we're kind of getting off topic, but you're here, so I'm going to ask you.
Okay.
It'll
be another great question.
I know, right here.
Well, and it was actually Dr. Canal that we had on, because he mentioned also that checklist thing, and he was talking mm-hmm. about the canal method and mm-hmm. how, yeah, it could be unsafe and detrimental to the patient's safety to do a certain device or implant or whatnot. But it could also be detrimental to the course of care.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so is there certain things that are just hard stops when it comes to implant?
For me?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Right. Everything evaluated.
Okay. I feel like everyone was just like, oh, an audible gasp was heard.
Right.
No, for me, they're not, but it's also not my decision. So for me, as an MRSO and as an MRSE, if I get something and it is unsafe, I'm not canceling that exam. I'm calling in my MRMD and I'm saying, hey, they have this implant and it's labeled as unsafe, or we can even go as far as to say it's not unsafe. It has conditions, but if they want to do this exam, so it would be off label. It's in your hands now. You tell me what, I can tell you, I can advise, I can say, this is what I think. This is what I think we can do to mitigate certain risk, but it's your decision. It's not, that's practice in medicine, so it's not my call.
So could you have scanned that guy with the metal in his wrist?
Probably.
What would you have done?
Probably just would. I mean, it was moving. So as long as he was comfortable, I probably would have advanced him into the scan into the magnet slowly. And from what I can recall, it was probably less than 2 centimeters. So less than 2 centimeters, we're not too concerned with heating. So I would put an ice pack on it.
So in less than 2 centimeters, an example, that would be an earring usually, right?
Yeah,
so
a stud earring, yeah.
So then would you have wrapped it with Coban or anything like that?
You can. I mean, it's moving. So, but that will only mitigate so much of the RF or the static field, right? I mean, I have heard of a few sites that are scanning unsafe tissue expanders, and they do that. They wrap them with Coban. I don't know how.
How do you wrap a tissue expander?
All the way around. And they only do them. They only do them on a 1.5. I don't know how they came to the conclusion that that's how they could mitigate all the risks. They do scan them prone.
Right.
That makes me nervous.
Right.
Just because I don't know, I don't want to find out on a patient, right? I don't want to be like, hey, let's put you in here and we'll wrap you and we'll put you prone and we'll go in really slow. I don't want to be the one that says, okay, we're going to test this out and see. I mean, I feel like that's what we have people like Canal and Shellock and all them for, right?
Right.
But some sites do try to do that to mitigate some of the static field risk. Yeah.
We got stories all day, but just recently I had a patient who had a piece of, I don't know, I think it was part, either something in the part of the vacuum or the vacuum went over. See, something, metal piece of metal flying to there was right here.
Oh my God.
From the vacuum cleaner?
Yeah. And I took a picture.
Sounds like they needed it.
And I'm like,
right.
What were you scanning on him?
What break?
So what did you do?
We were told to wrap it in Coban, but when it's right here, we'd have to do this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Or.
Yeah.
Yeah, either way, you're losing that one.
The tech chose not to wrap it in Coban. I wasn't the scanning tech.
Did they put an ice pack or anything on it? No.
Just put them in slowly on a 3T, scan the brain, and says squeeze the ball if you feel anything.
Yeah, patient's alert oriented. Mm-hmm.
I think another consideration too then is it if it moves, right? Because now we're concerned with static field. It's so small, we've said, hey, we can mitigate heating. But now we're concerned with, is it going to move? So if it does move, is it close to any anatomy that it would cause some damage if it did move? I mean,
that's one thing I've always found interesting is whenever we have an implant on some sort of unknown metal for whatever it might be, we're always told to take an FMD to it and mm-hmm. a magnet to it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and then it's like, did you do both those things? Yes. Were they both positive? Yes. Okay, scan. It's like, well, then what's, if it doesn't matter if it's positive or not, and neither way your question's gonna, or your answer's going to be scanned,
mm-hmm.
then why do I need to like even go through those steps?
That's a good question for your MRMD. Yeah, for me, at least my experience with this has been, sometimes I want an x-ray, right? We need to make sure it's not near any anatomy. We want to make sure we know the position of it. So we typically two view x-ray so we can see it from both sides. And then how do we mitigate the risk, or can we mitigate the risk from there? But knowing if it's ferrous or not, and that's probably why they're asking you to do that as the first start, right? So if it's not ferrous, what am I worried about?
Right.
Potential heating? Okay, put an ice pack on it if it's that small. But if it is ferrous, then the next thing that I'm worried about is it going to move?
Okay. Well, and we're kind of getting off the topic of RF burns.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. We're getting off topic, but cold pack makes me think of another thing that I've come across in my career is I see a lot of patients ask for cold wet washcloth over their eyes. Ooh. And the answer is absolutely no.
I wouldn't.
But then I've had the patients say they'd let me do it last time. And I'm like, who let you do that last time? And then I've asked other techs. I've even asked very high up people in the world of MRI safety sitting in that very same chair as you. Like, if a patient walked in with wet hair, what would you do? Would you still scan them? Would you give them a towel and tell them to dry their hair? Like, what is your idea, thoughts on
what that? I personally would not. Would you put water in something that's electric? Would you go pour water in a microwave or in a toaster?
You already know what happens when that.
I would.
What about the water or the wet hair?
That's what I'm talking about. No, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't give a wet washcloth either.
Yeah.
Katie did bring up the conductivity.
Oh, yeah. Where did gold fall in that? Is it high? Is it low? Is it moderate?
That's better.
Compared to, so it is kind of high. Through our list of stuff here, heated resonant loop, I think we discussed that. I did want you to kind of talk about the antenna effect.
Okay. So e-fields like to gather around sharp points in an MRI. So when we talk about antenna effect, what kind of burn is that? I'm putting you guys on the spot now.
I guess I would have to know more about it, because I've actually, when doing this research for this topic, mm-hmm. it's one of the first times I've ever even heard of that term, antenna effect.
Okay.
You know that? Mm-hmm. No. Can you answer on behalf of this group? So.
Resonant circuitry burn.
Yes, ma'am. She's right.
Hey, girl.
Is that the same as loop?
No. Remember,
no, loop it's reflective.
Resonant and reflective can be confused, but right, resonant is, so typically when we think about resonant burn, that's going to be anything that matches the wavelength of that scanner, right? So think about things like an X-Fix. You've probably seen this. There are some X-Fixes that it's like, okay, it can go on a 3T, but it can't go on a 1.5.
Sure.
And the reason why is because the length of that matters. So generally when we move up in magnetic fields, like if we go from a 1.5 to a 3T, overall heating increases, right? But resonant burns can occur at both field strengths. The distance or the length that we're worried about changes from a 1.5 to a 3T. So the wavelength on a 1.5 is longer than the wavelength on a 3T. So the length that we're concerned with on a 3T is about 12 to 15 centimeters. And the length that we're concerned about on a 1.5 is 25 to 30 centimeters. And that's like a half wavelength. Now, if it's partially implanted inside of a patient's body, then we apply a 1/4 rule to that.
You're probably good at math, huh?
I think that I am.
Okay, I'm just kind of going through our stuff. So I did want to kind of touch up on statistics.
Okay.
Like they say it's number one adverse event, RF burns.
Mm-hmm.
What are those numbers? Is there a database. And I know that you said earlier that a lot of these things got reported, and kudos to Toby for the care report.
Yeah, no, for sure.
We're going to start to see metrics to that more so. But we'll get to that in a second. All right. So, and the statistics, so that national, international, but then also I'm curious if there's a statistic on like what type of exam, like what exams are high susceptible.
Yeah.
And get into even more detail, not just what exam, but like what sequences. And so I think that kind of falls under the next category I wanted to cover, which was causes of this. So we talked about like body habitus, we talked about field strength, we could talk about positioning of the patient, contact with the objects, but one of those are sequences. So what sequences would you most likely see in our brain?
So remember, sequences we're going to be worried about overall heating, right? So obviously, if you go from a 1.5 to a 3T, or if you go from normal operating mode to first level controlled, we're going to put more RF energy deposition into our patient. So now there's more e-fields that can collect in these places. But we can scan all day on a 3 Tesla and not burn anybody. We can run turbospin echoes. We can run these high energy sequences and not burn anybody, because a burn is not necessarily related to the amount of RF energy that we're giving a patient. That's overall heating. That's diffuse heating. Burns are going to be related to, are you touching a transmitter? Do we have skin-to-skin contact? Did you leave your Lululemon leggings on today? Did I leave a coil looped up in the magnet? Now it can collect all these voltages and produce a burn. So, yes, we can put more heat into our patient. We can have more eddy currents and more e-fields that are now wandering around and trying to find a place to go. But going to a higher strength magnet or running a higher RF sequence, it's not necessarily indicative of we're going to burn this patient. It's more indicative of we're heating our patient up. We're cooking them up a little bit from the inside, right?
Right. Okay, so like positioning is probably the biggest part.
Positioning, proper padding, making sure that coils are, or that leads are not coiled up, that they run out in a straight line, and that you're padded those away from the skin, that they're not touching the skin, that there's no minimal skin-to-skin contact.
So you kind of went over the next topic I wanted to cover, which was preventative measures. So positioning would be a preventative measure. Yeah. And then I wanted to touch on if you had like a suggestion of a supplemental or alternative sequence that you could run to avoid that susceptibility. But again, you're saying, no, it's more the position of the patient than the actual sequence.
Right. I mean, think about like a GRE sequence. It's going to be low amount of heat that we're, or RF energy that we're giving our patients. But I mean, still, if you run all gradients, even if your patient, if I'm laying in there with my thumb to my ear and that's in the transmit field, I can still get a burn. Maybe less likely because now there's less energy in my patient, but it still could happen.
Right. And then we talked about it earlier, but just, I guess, because I was going to say considerations. So things that you want to like be more hyper aware of situations. So as far as anesthesia, non-responsive patients, sedated patients, what about pediatrics?
Oh, I'm glad you brought this up. Let's talk about babies, NICU, neonates.
Give me anxiety.
So do you all scan those? No?
I have. Not yeah? Where I'm at.
How do they come down to the department? NICUs.
Swaddled.
And in what? What do they come down in? An incubator. Why? Because they dissipate heat so quickly. Right? They have all this skin, right? And this little tiny body. And where do we lose heat? At the surface. We lose heat at our skin, so they dissipate heat. I have seen burns in neonates, but I have seen burns in neonates from like looping burns. So maybe somebody put the wrong pulse ox on the baby, or they left something touching their skin. But NICUs, neonates, they dissipate heat much, much faster than we do, and significantly faster than like obese patients will.
Wow. Okay. And then you talked about EKG leads. We didn't really talk about that. We talked about jewelry. We talked about clothing. What about like wound dressing? I know there's a silver.
Yeah. I think I would, there's one now silver. And I can't.
That's number one.
There are you. Oh, yeah.
So I would look up the conditions to them. I have seen, and I'm, I'm drawing a blank right now, but there's like a dressing that you can put in there. It's like a pad, like you pack it in. We have always removed those, or at least I have always removed those, especially if it's in the transmit field for two reasons. One, I think heating, and the two, it gives you a terrible artifact. But I do know now that there's some sort of bandage that has silver in it that's more conditional.
Do you know that, Katie?
So.
All right.
I worked at one of the like top three burn centers in the world, or the country, I mean.
Yeah.
And so we saw that.
What did you all do?
We had to remove it.
Yeah. Regardless of where it was, transmit field or not.
Yeah, but I was working at a place that was less educated on like preventative measures, and it was
blanket policies.
It wasn't. It was just black and white too much, and they didn't really consider a lot of gray areas,
which is tough for patients.
Yeah,
it's unfortunate.
But you know, at the time, you know, you're a product of your environment. And if you're in an environment that's like really like safety conscious, and you're also like very like invested in education and stuff like that, well, then you're going to be a better all-around tech. But this place happened not to be any of those, so
yeah,
I try to avoid talking bad about people.
But I think the reality is that there are a lot of places that are still like that. You know, there are a lot of places that don't have MRSOs, they don't have MRMDs. There are a lot of facilities that don't even have MR safety policies. They don't have anybody that oversees MR safety. It's just call me or don't call me. Just don't do it, right?
Where we're at now is the first place I've ever worked with a physicist.
Mm-hmm.
Before, you'd only see the physicist once a year when he'd come in and do his ACR. Yeah. So we kind of live in a bubble where we're in a place where they actually are very serious about MRI safety. And it's not a place that's just trying to like...
We kind of lead instead of follow, I guess.
Yeah.
We kind of help make the standards and not necessarily follow what the standards are, I guess.
Yeah.
We can't talk about where we work, but...
Yeah. But it's nice.
All right.
Learn a lot.
We're kind of just breezing through this, and we've actually covered a lot of this as far as the outline that I put together for this episode, but I did want to touch on treatment. You did mention cold press. We mentioned, like, Katie, you mentioned, like, taking pictures and drawing lines around, but usually what's... And Katie, you might know this, but how long does it usually take for it to go? I mean, and also treatment-wise, sometimes you have to go to surgery.
I think it can depend on the severity of the burn, right? I think there could be up to like third-degree burns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is that just cosmetic surgery? So it's like
skin grafts, right?
Is it? Wow. I wasn't aware of that. And you brought up a picture before. It almost looked like a skin graft.
And I want to be clear too. So when you're hearing that even we have this stuff happen, we literally check every box a lot of times, and it can still happen. So I don't want you to feel like, you know, when this stuff kind of happens to you, like you did something wrong. Sometimes you can do everything right and it still happen.
Yeah. Where we work now, I've never seen any place as diligent with safety precautions.
Right.
Yet I've seen more than one RF burn.
But we do see a lot of patients too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, numbers is a factor to consider. But
oh my goodness, that one that says day 8 on it, is it eight or 6? I can't see that.
Oh, I know, right?
Oh, that looks awful. And so my understanding at least is that they can continue to manifest for up to like 10 to 14 days.
Wow. So I can go home.
Yeah.
Relax.
So I heard
like a sunburn almost.
So I heard a story, and I can't remember where I heard this. I'm probably going to get some of this wrong, right? But I heard a story of somebody saying that they were skinning this guy. They skinned a lumbar spot on him, like super fit guy, trained his calves a lot. And that's important, right? Well, I'll show our calves later too. So his calves were huge. So they put him in the magnet. They skinned his lumbar spot. He went in feet first. He came out. Got halfway home and was like, why are my calves on fire? Literally just one spot, and he looked down and they had been like barely touching, and he had big red spots, and he went to the ER and they were like, you have a burn. And so he didn't know when he was there. He didn't know until he got halfway home, and then it took days for it to manifest fully, but he had a huge burn from them just barely touching.
So that's actually an example where it doesn't matter if a patient's unresponsive or not or sedated.
I mean, he didn't know.
Well, yeah, but a lot of times you just assume the patient's going to feel it happen and they'll squeeze a ball across, address it.
So fat doesn't have any pain receptors, though, right? I mean.
I wouldn't know.
How fortunate. But so if there...
Hey, we go get water, Katie. They should go water.
So if there are no pain receptors in fat, and that's where the burn, that's where a burn's going to start, because fat has a lower conductivity. So it's like, hey, I can't move this through here. Then it is going to say, you will start a burn there. And they may not necessarily know, like, oh man, I got it. But this guy was like super fit. So I'm like, how much, probably didn't have a whole lot of fat on his calves at all. But if it starts in your fat and you have no pain receptors there, you may not know, right? You might say, hey, this is getting a little warm. Have you all had an MRI? Yeah.
Yeah. Testicles this week.
Have you? Yeah. Did you get warm?
I've been scanned on a 17.
Did you get warm?
Yeah,
I did too.
Right.
So how, like, think about it from that perspective. I got
hot Robert.
He's on a roll today.
Well, if you know that about me, but
what?
It's legit.
Yeah.
Say it again.
They call me hot Robert.
Hot.
But you don't just say it like hot Robert. It's like kind of like hot pocket. You're like hot Robert. Go ahead, try it.
Hot Robert. That's the most singing I'm going to do today. Can we clip that?
We're definitely removing all of that. We're going to edit that.
You can leave.
Bring it on. Moving on.
No, I feel like you're about to make a great point that Robert called out hot Robert.
Yeah, I do that sometimes.
But think about how warm we got in there.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Right.
And so if a patient, if you feel that heat all over anyway, and think about nerves, a lot of our patients get in there and they're like, I don't know what to expect. I don't know how long this is going to take. It's really loud. I'm uncomfortable. If it's an abdomen scan, I'm holding my breath. So there's so much other things that they're thinking about other than, like, I'm feeling this one little tiny hot spot on my calves, right? So, I mean, I think there are multiple reasons why they may not know, oh, I'm getting a burn here.
Right. All great things. You're awesome, Kelly. Thank you. I mean, I feel like we've covered a lot today, and I appreciate that. Like, Katie, can you think of anything that maybe...
Yeah, the one thing I was going to mention was one practice that we do where I work with anesthesia patients that may be off ISO or otherwise. We actually do like a heat check with the patient, and we actually pull the patient out of the bore to do that, kind of check their skin. But another thing that comes with that is if there is some sort of coupling that's happening with the RF in a proximity, by moving that patient from that exact spot they were in the scanner, you've now kind of decoupled that. You've kind of given that area a break. So even if there's padding and stuff there, that could be contributing.
Yes, that's another thing that I think we should talk about. So I know a story of a girl who was scanning a patient, and the patient squeezed the ball and said, hey, she's scanning a wrist. And so I don't know all the details. I don't know how she had the patient in there. I'm assuming, you know, in the wrist coil, there's like a little pad on top and bottom. And then if you've got your patient laying like Superman, their arm bends down. So I'm assuming her arm bent down and touched the bare coil and not the pad. And the patient squeezed the ball and said, it feels really, really hot right here. She said, can you come in and look at it? And she comes in and she looks at it, and it's not red or anything, right? She's like, we got 3 minutes left. Can you keep going?
Dang.
She got a burn.
Dang.
But at that point, it was too late, right? At that point, she's feeling that heat. She's feeling that heat from the inside out. So it didn't manifest that day. I think it actually didn't manifest until the next day. But for me, if a patient says, hey, I feel hot, or if I come in there and I look at you and you're red, full stop, we're coming out. The damage is already done. You can't undo it, but let's not make it worse.
They weren't red, though.
Right. But she was hot, and she was touching the coil. She wasn't touching the padding. She was touching the actual coil.
And
we're coming out.
Right.
Hope y'all didn't need that last sequence because we're done.
Right.
But she continued. She was likely already burnt. We just didn't know it. So damage was already done, but let's not make it worse and do more. I think Manny Cannell says that, and I think I've said it too, burns are 100% preventable, right? I mean, I feel like most MR accidents are 100% preventable. We just have to know what to do to prevent those. And I think that's probably where we're part of the reason why we're still seeing this continue, is that we just don't know how to prevent accidents.
Right. Yeah, like I said, that one burn that I saw was a pretty significant one. And that might have been the one that went to surgery. I swear, I was there. The tech, I vouched for him. I saw it. I said he used padding. He did everything right. And I thought he did.
I'd be curious to know.
Now you're like, well, no, it was preventable. I'm like, oh, okay.
It just makes me wonder, like, when, if he moved, you know how sometimes the table will shift a little bit? It just makes me wonder, like, did the padding shift? Or especially sometimes, too, if they get in there and they get sticky, the padding will stick to the side of the scanner, or sweaty, not sticky. But then the patient will be sweaty and they'll slide and the padding won't. And then it just makes me wonder, like, Did they maybe slide out and the padding wasn't touching their skin, or what happened?
Sure. So since they, like I said, they've implemented policies where we do all shoulders, because I think it was a shoulder, and maybe I think it was all shoulder, all isocenter imaging, off isocenter imaging to a 1.5. We have elbow pads mm-hmm. that we put on them, mm-hmm. and then we do those skin checks every 10 minutes.
Yeah. I like the skin checks.
That's subjective though, because like when you go in there, you're like,
Yeah, how did they tell you guys to check them? Like, do you just look for redness, or do you palpate and like feel for heat?
Yeah, we usually actually touch their skin. Mm-hmm. We'll kind of do arms, legs,
high risk,
maybe chest. Mm-hmm. Yeah, more of the high risk areas. But of course, adding the extra padding and stuff is helpful.
So have you ever had one where you've gone in and you've been like, I think we're done. I think this patient's too, they're overheating. Or
I personally have not called a case on that, but I have seen my peers do that. Yes.
And we discontinued that case and it was with anesthesia and everything, you know. Yeah, it's kind of a big deal and we didn't want to stop, but we got everybody involved and they made the choice. So let's just stop right now.
Yeah, I think even the patient's like core temperature was rising. You could see it on the monitor and it was just finally like somebody called it.
Yep.
Well,
man.
Sounds like you guys have a good process in place.
For sure. We got people like Katie on our team. Y'all got a good process. But to bring it full circle, I guess, so the first thing you want to do is pretty much identify if this is a high-risk patient that's going to possibly get an RF burn, right? And then you want to go through each type of scenario to make sure that you're going to be doing the correct processes mm-hmm. to make sure that, you know, you're putting the best foot forward for that patient as they go in. Mm-hmm. And then you just hope for the best, right? And make sure that, you know,
check in on your patient. Right. Yeah, when you can, right? You doing okay?
Right.
You want me to turn the fans on a little bit higher? You want me to come take the blanket off of you? Now remember, those things are overall, those are diffuse heating, right? But still, like, we don't want them to get too hot.
Right. No, that's a good point. Don't forget the easy stuff. We do get caught up in the weeds with all the complications with MR and forget that there's so many easy preventative measures we can also
do. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
For sure. Well, I think that pretty much sums it up. All right. Well, we're going to ask you now the question that we ask at the end of every episode.
Yes.
Kelly, mm-hmm. what would you say has been the most fulfilling moment of your healthcare career?
For me, passing my MRSE was probably the most. I can remember, and I'll tell this story. So I went to, when I took my MRSO, I didn't go to a conference. I just studied on my own and was like, I'm going to go do this. I was working in an outpatient facility at the time. We didn't scan any implants. But I remember I made this promise to myself like 13 years ago that if I could acquire that knowledge and then give that knowledge to other people, I would. So I was like, I'm going to do this. But whenever I went to take my MRSE, I went to Manny Canales Conference in D.C., which was phenomenal. Have you guys had an opportunity to go to one of those? Oh, gosh. He's a storyteller for sure, but he's nice. Manny's a great guy. And it said pass, and I immediately started crying. I know. And some guy, we had masks. We were wearing masks at the time still, and some guy walked by, and he was like, are you okay? And I was like, I'm just really happy right now. So for me, yeah, I think that was it. Not being a physicist. Essentially, I've had some mentors along the way, but essentially being like self-taught, just for me, that was very, very like.
Do you recommend that for MRSOs to accept that challenge and maybe take it a step forward?
I don't think that there's anything bad in doing it.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think the more that you can learn and the more that you can apply that to your patients, the better off that they're going to be. But yeah, so I don't know. I don't know if I would say yes, everyone should go do it. But it certainly doesn't hurt, you know.
What study material did you use?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I can't. I don't think so. Being on the board, I think it's a conflict if I share.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is it run with?
Robert's like, we're going to get her. When you took your MRSO, did you feel like when you left, how did you feel? Were you like, oh, I feel good about this? Or
for MRSO?
Yeah.
I felt like I nailed it.
Good. That's great.
All right. Well, I think that's it. Reggie, we're missing anything?
No. Kelly, of course, thank you so much.
Thanks for
your knowledge. Man, it's a great episode. I would like to thank everybody, of course, for watching, tuning in every week, that we at least have an episode. So thank you, God, for that for sure. Katie, anything?
No, thank you, Kelly. You're great.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And look into the care report.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's a new reporting tool for sure.
We appreciate you guys. Thank you, Zone 3.
We are out.
Cut.
The information and comments provided in the Zone 3 podcast and website are not intended to be technical or medical recommendations or advice for individuals or patients. The information and comments provided under the auspices of Zone 3 podcasts and their guests are of a general nature and should not be considered specific to any individual or patient. Whether or not a specific patient is referenced by the physician, technologist, individual, group, or other entity seeking information. Zone 3 podcast may provide links or references to websites. Such links are provided as a convenience to our listeners seeking more information on topics. These websites are not affiliated with Zone 3 podcast, nor do they endorse or manage content discussions unless otherwise stated during recording.